The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. I'm Jen Coburn and it is great that you could join us. Now, as listeners of The Parents Show, it's a strong bet that many of you might relate if I said, tonight we are talking about the juggle, the term used to describe that plate spinning that many parents feel they're constantly doing, and in particular when it comes to managing work and jobs alongside parenting and caring for a family. It is a lot, and it can be really overwhelming. However, if you are struggling with the work-life balance currently, it doesn't mean things can't change, especially if you have the support of someone like my guest tonight, the wonderful Kat Scott. Hello, Kat.
Hello, Jen. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for coming in and chatting to us tonight. I'm really excited to talk to you about this. It's something I'm really interested in as a mum myself. Kat, why don't you just start by telling the listeners what it is you do?
Yeah, okay. So I am a career coach, primarily for creative people, but coaching can support people from all walks of life. And a lot of my clients are parents who have been in the industries for like 15 odd years. They went into the industry fresh behind the ears, doing the thing they loved. And then 15 years later, they've got children, they've got mortgages, they've got really senior roles in their organisation, and they just don't get to do the stuff they love anymore. So they come to me to work out what it is that they want to be doing, and we spend a lot of time working on them, understanding them, before we even get on to, right, okay, what are you going to do about work then?
So it's about work coaching, but also is there an element of sort of life balance coaching as well with that? It's not just looking at your business day, is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think everything that I do with my clients goes back to them and their beliefs, their values, the stories that they tell themselves, because quite often there's a story that we've believed our whole lives, either because our parents have drummed it into us or because of an experience from school, that then we carry all the way through our lives, and that will block you from making any sensible, empowering decisions in your current and into your future. So if we can start there and understand what those beliefs are, what's led to that, but also how helpful they are currently and how we can move forwards despite them, you can do so much, much more with your career once you understand you.
So Kat, for our listeners who aren't aware of a coach, how would you define a coach compared to other people or other bodies that might support somebody?
Jen, that is such a good question and a really important distinction to make. And it's something that I talk to my clients about in our very first meeting so that they understand what support I can provide for them. But if there is a crossover where I don't believe that I'm qualified, then I will absolutely refer them to the right support for them. The way I make that distinction is that if you are seeking therapy for either a trauma or because you might have some depression or a mental health need that needs support, you might need a psychologist or a psychotherapist. And one of the best ways to describe it is that those professions tend to look at what's gone on for you in the past that's caused some trauma or something that's happened that's got you to where you are now. And they address that and they dig deep into that. And that's where their specialism is. Coaching is all about looking forward. So when I meet my clients, it's about, okay, these things have happened to you, and we use some of that history to inform our future. But coaching is really all about looking forward. So it's about, okay, you're here. Where do you want to be? What's getting in your way of getting to where you want to be? And now let's make a plan to help you get there.
Fantastic. You know how I describe it, Kat, to my friends? I've used career coaches before. And I call it, it's a bit like having a cheerleader. It's like getting a new teammate. It's like, here's where I am struggling and I can't seem to get out of the weeds on it. I feel like something isn't right, but I want to move forward. And sometimes you just need someone in your corner, someone who isn't a family member or a friend who may be invested also in the decision you get to. I think coaches can be fantastic cheerleaders for you and teammates. Yeah. So that's how I've mentioned it with my friends before. So Kat, tell me, how did you get into coaching? And now you run your own coaching company, but how did that all happen? Is it something you've always done or how did you get here?
So my background is in HR, which I've recently discovered isn't called HR anymore, by the way. It's now called people and culture. So I've got a background in people and culture. And I worked mostly in creative industries for like 20 years. And when I was going for a promotion, I was gifted a coach. And she helped me sort of build my confidence, overcome some of my, I'm not as good as those people over there and I've not got as much experience as those over there, and help me really understand what it, therefore the value that I add is and how I can stand in my own expertise, my knowledge, and thrive in that role. So she really helped me get ready for that promotion, and I got the promotion and off I went. But then I got pregnant.
Dun, dun, dun.
But I remember my boss just like hanging his head like, oh my God, I've just given you a promotion.
Whoa.
But that's a whole different story.
Yeah.
But so I went off on maternity leave from the best job I'd ever had on maternity leave and had my first baby. And then while I was off, they brought in a maternity cover who was more experienced than me, was more senior than I had ever been. And when I was coming back, of course, they didn't want to lose her. So they kept my maternity cover and she became my boss. And so it was the most awkward dynamic for the two of us to live through, but also for all of my self-worth, my motivation. I was at like an all-time low when I went back in and I really struggled for about 6 months or so. And then the company said, oh, why don't you start seeing your coach again? And I was just like, oh no, it's not the right thing. But she, the exact same coach who'd helped me get ready for a promotion, helped me get past this like belief that all of this stuff was happening because of me, and helped me realize that actually this was just organizational changes. There were circumstances that had led us to where we were, and that I was still just as capable, just as valuable. I was just in the wrong place, the wrong time, and so on. And it helped me with my confidence to be like, I'm still good. I just don't fit here anymore. So when I had my second baby and they offered me redundancy, I was like, yes, please. I took all their money. And then what came with the redundancy was they offered training to support you either in like things like, it's called outplacement support. And it's either like you can get help writing a CV or interview skills. I used that cash to retrain as a coach because I'd loved the experience so much and I'd seen the value it can bring. And frankly, I'm in the business of making people's work lives happier and changing lives and making people feel happy. And it just fit with all of the things that I already loved in my job. So I retrained as a coach. Then COVID happened, so I wasn't able to actually do a lot of coaching. So I was looking at staying at home, doing the juggle, you know, looking after the children.
Doing the juggle.
And then so it took a little while, but I did a bit of coaching, and then I set up my coaching practice in May 2023.
Amazing. And for the Parents Show, obviously, for our listeners as well, it's a story that many might resonate with because it is a story of a shifting career happening at a time when you have a child, and that, you know, there were other, obviously, factors, it sounds like, involved, but it is a gigantic change in your life when you have a child and when you're working. Joining the two worlds together can be a very confusing, very kind of unsettling time. Do you find that you have a lot of parents coming to you then? Is that something that plays into a lot of your clients' struggles at the moment?
Yeah. I think, I'm just trying to think percentage-wise, almost all of the people that come to me are parents.
Right. Wow. It's incredible that so many of your clients are parents. Are there different issues they're having as parents with this juggle and managing the work-life balance that you've noticed?
Yes. And there's sort of, I guess there's three main areas. So they come to me with, I'm not happy at work. And I'm starting to see sort of three main areas that, because almost all of them are parents, there's so much about the juggle and about the guilt that comes with working and the ability to do a great job and have a family. Like all of the things that, despite me not being a parent coach, because so many of my clients are parents, the stuff they end up bringing is all related to it.
So what are those three sort of groups that you have noticed?
So the first one is parents who have taken time out to have their children and want to go back in. But because they've heard from friends that the industry is different, that people are squabbling over the jobs, there's not enough of them. The skill set's different. There's so much AI in the world now. Like, will they even want me? So for those people, they've taken time out to raise their family, and the idea of going back in is terrifying. But some of the stuff that we work on together is, but you've still got all the skills, you've still got all the ability to demonstrate your what you can do, have conversations with the right people, influence, etc. So we do a lot of work on what they can do, and also helping them understand and appreciate the power of the network that they built whilst they were in work. I think that's a really, really important piece.
I mean, talking to some of my friends who have come out of the workplace to have their kids, and that can be, you know, they're out of work for maybe 5 years, you know, until they go to school, you know, maybe they have one, then they have the other. You know, that can be a long 5-6 years.
Yeah.
It must be a lot for confidence, that, to try and then re-enter the workplace, and quite a complicated time. So how do you, as a coach in this scenario, help your clients?
So I said just earlier that I don't do a lot of work looking backwards. That sits in a different territory, and I'm really clear that I need to play in my lane. But what we do in my coaching program is we have the second session is called the Scribbled Line session. And we do look backwards, and we look at the career path that you have had to date and the highs and the lows of your career. And the reason that we do that is because there'll be nuggets of you telling your story of your past career that demonstrates things that you absolutely don't want to have happen again, the types of people you never want to work with again, the environment you're never going to go back into, the type of work that you absolutely refuse to do because you don't have to, you've got choice and you can decide what's okay for you. But what it also does is it allows you to really focus on the wins, the highlights, and I call it your trophy cabinet. It's what you have done in your career that you are so proud of and can continue to be proud of. And that then can act as a springboard for our next session, which is then when we look really very much into the future and what, okay, we've looked at your past, we know what you're brilliant at, how can you take that forward into your next career?
And it may not be entering the old career, it could always be entering a new career, is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, in my experience, people like to go back to what they knew before because it's safe and they understand it and they've done it and they know it and the environment, you know. But once they actually start digging, they realise that because it is different, it isn't as easy as just slotting back in. But also they're so different. Their life experience is different. Their responsibilities are so different. Their financial situation might be different. Their relationships with their partners, you know, when they're the support network. They might have had a baby and they had a parent to help them, like their own parents to help them, who 5 years later might be not well enough or not even around anymore. So there's so much that happens in those years that changes you as a person. So the career that you choose next needs to fit with who you are now. And that's one of my, funnily enough, that's one of my taglines on my website. Like, let's carve out a career for you that's right for you now. So when you're 20, you can do whatever you want. But when you're 45, it's a little bit more tricky.
True.
But you also know yourself so much better. And so you can look for the career that you want that aligns with who you are.
It's a way of reframing, it sounds like to me as well, in that it can feel, it, you know, very intimidating going back to work after you've had time out. But the way you're just chatting then, the feeling I got was it could be exciting. Like if you felt like, wow, actually, I don't have to go back to that job that actually I wasn't that massively keen on by the time I finished mat leave. You can go and you can make changes and it could be exciting and it could work for you better. So, you know, that's something to also hold on to, or kind of feeling excitement with all of this. So that's sort of one group that you've noticed. What's another group that you've noticed, Kat, that you've been working with when it comes to these parents and work-life juggle?
Yeah. So in my world, there are lots of people in creative roles that went in, and I'd keep talking about when you're 20, you liked making beautiful things. So you went into a job that allowed you to do that and you did a job that was creative and fabulous. Then you've been really successful, or clients have been successful. They're now really at the top of their game and they're managing teams. They're managing the critical time path, all these spreadsheets, the budget, all this stuff that's absolutely miles away from their natural talents of creating beautiful things. But what comes with that is a load of responsibility, good and bad. Like you get to be, you have great power, you have big influence, you have a lot of money, more than you probably did when you were 20. And that's really difficult to just turn your back on. But what comes up for people is that they're not loving the job. So they feel like they're stuck in corporate and they can't just go and quit and do freelancing, let's say, because so many people depend on their income, their teams depend on their guidance and so on. And they love their teams quite often. Creatives are quite sensitive souls normally.
I was going to say, so these are the parents that, unlike the ones that paused when they had a child, these are the ones that kept their foot down on the pedal because 100%. They needed, you know, they were climbing that career and they're doing brilliant. Yeah. And actually they lent in, because we all knew about the phrases leaning in and leaning out. There's no right or wrong way. But for the parents that lent in and remained and climbed, and wow, they've got big money, big house, big car. Suddenly, I imagine that gets big overwhelm.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I see my role as stepping between them and overwhelm, really, and burnout. And how that, for that group of people, kind of manifests is that they genuinely can't afford to quit. They can't just go, I'm not doing this anymore. For them, for that group of people, it's about how, okay, if you're like killing yourself with work, how can you change things at work to make it work for you? And some of the beliefs that people come with are, well, no one's going to let me. Or, oh, I've seen so-and-so ask for 4 days a week. They weren't allowed. Oh, they're trying to make us all come back into the office. There's no way they'll let me change my work pattern. You know, my role with that client group is, okay, you don't know until you ask, but you can't ask until you know what you're asking for, and preparing them for a conversation. And quite often that's all it takes, but that's sometimes the biggest, scariest thing, is having a conversation with their boss or their boss's boss. So preparing them for the conversation, enabling their influence, helping them to feel empowered going into the room so that they know what they're asking for, knowing what their space to negotiate is, because often it's going to become a negotiation. But it's a bit more of, I think those clients, I lean a little bit more into my HR skill set, which is helping people navigate the relationships between their managers and employees and managing upwards and making the work environment suit them rather than fucking it up.
Because to be clear, you can definitely be a very, very successful career person and a parent. It's not a choice. It is just a way of, like you said, managing and maybe making some adjustments there, but being brave enough to ask for them and know your worth to ask for the ones that you want. Because often we get told that we are the generation, I'm talking as a 43-year-old woman, that we want it all. We were told, first of all, we can have it all. Now we're being told you shouldn't want it all. You can't have it all. You should be choosing. And I mean, I don't think there's a right or wrong answer to either of those things. I think you can have what you desire. And if you do want to try and juggle it all, you can. But that's where someone like a coach really can help, because it could be that you are burning your energy in the wrong directions.
Maybe it's,
I have to travel every week to the big team meeting up in Birmingham, because if I don't, it would look bad and all the rest of it. But actually, it's killing me in the childcare, and I've never managed to go to, you know, the drama rehearsal with my kid or whatever. Well, maybe that isn't actually the thing that you need to be doing, and you can still hugely successful in your career. You're just burning out on the wrong things. I don't know. I'm trapping on you, but that's how I kind of see it.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right, Jen. I think there's two things that came up there for me. One is that you need to get clear on what your boundaries are. So if going up to Birmingham's not an option, it doesn't mean you're flaky. That just means it's not an option. And if you look at like mega successful women and men, but women in particular, their diaries are really set. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to go from here to here. And if you want a meeting with me, you fit in with me. Quite often what we all do is go, oh, well, let me see if I can make it work. I can see you maybe at 4. I'm meant to be going home then, but if you can be really rigid and get a reputation for being like, I leave at 4, people respect it. People do respect it, but it's a different behaviour. And so there's something about setting your own boundaries in there. The other thing that came up then, Jen, was that if people need that high paid job, they don't have to stay in that company. They're not trapped in that corporate role. They could also start to look outside their organization. And that is something that, as a coach, you know, sometimes it just takes a nudge just to say, oh, right, you've talked a lot about your current company. What other opportunities are there? And they go, oh, I haven't even thought about looking outside. So the juggle that people have, if they've decided to stay in a corporate role and climb the ladder, is different from one of the people who've taken that time out. But they can both work. It's about finding your voice, understanding what your needs are, and then building a career to suit that, and finding the confidence to have those conversations, really.
We'll take a quick break now on The Parents Show on Mix 92.6.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6, sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
And then you said there was a third kind of group that you had noticed that you're working with currently. What are those parents dealing with?
So I talk about these quite a lot, although these aren't necessarily the core of my business. They're probably, but they sound the most exciting because they're the ones who have always dreamt of starting their own thing, having their own creative business, or even setting up like a side hustle. So they've got their main job, but they still get to do the creative, beautiful stuff on the side. And so I see a lot of coaches telling their Instagram followers and so on that you can do that. If you're miserable in your corporate job, just quit. just go and do the nice creative stuff and you can do it. And people do. I see my role as making sure people make very considered decisions around that, because if you go freelance, you don't get sick pay, you don't get holiday pay, you don't get pension, etc., etc., which you might be very used to if you stayed in corporate. But if you're creative and you're not getting that creative input in your life, then creatives will say, like, I may as well be dead, because they need that creativity. So when people come to me and they're doing a big job, quite often the thing that they let go of, they cannot not parent. They have to do that and they have to do the work. So the juggle is just like, ah, and they lose sight of them and the things that they're the most happy doing and the thing they're most passionate about. And so for that group of people, I spend quite a lot of time pulling out, what is it then? What is it when you were a kid? Like, what did you like the most? Or if you look back into your 20s when you were footloose and fancy free, what did you spend your Friday nights doing or your Wednesdays after work? Did you go to the theatre or did you go to an art gallery? Like, I call it reconnecting with your passions, because I think that can be enough for some people if they could just inject that creativity back into their lives, either by a side hustle, not even making any money, just doing it as a hobby, or the dream, which is to sort of start their own business and be able to thrive in it and have the children, you know, that's the dream.
It sounds to me like it's more like, rather than surviving the juggle, this is about thriving in the juggle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
And as a creative myself, I definitely know that. I know that feeling of when the creative aspect of your life gets sort of nudged out with all other, you know, scheduling and parenting and jobs and stuff, you can feel very low as a creative if you don't have that spark. So if there are parents out there who are feeling like that, again, a coach is somebody who could maybe help you reconnect with that. And exactly as you said, Kat, not saying, that's it, quit your jobs, don't get any money coming in, but it'll be fine, the candles will take off, you'll be a millionaire in a year, everyone wants that candle. Yeah. Maybe not. You still need to pay for the childcare, but
yeah,
maybe you could still make those candles, but just quietly for joy, and then it takes off. Maybe then a few people want to make it, but joy is something. Joy and the juggle. We need to bring more joy into the juggle, Kat. That's what I'm talking about.
That is it. Bring joy into the juggle, because we can't get around the juggle.
No. And let's be very clear, and I want to put this down on the record. The juggle is a very privileged position to be in, because being a parent is a wonderful, wonderful thing. If that is what you wanted in your life, then it's not something that you should be thinking, oh God, this is so hard. You know, it is hard, but count your lucky stars if that is what you wanted. And tell me, Kat, I mean, we could talk all night about this, and quite frankly, we have been talking a lot about this, but I'm wondering just briefly, as a parent or as a person, sometimes it is hard to justify investing in ourselves, because obviously, you know, you pay for a coach. Is it something, though, that you feel strongly that investing in yourself is something important for people to do?
I have seen coaching change people's lives, even in like 1 hour. It often is the first time people have articulated things that have been floating around in their minds and admitting things that they've never admitted before, because what you create as a coach is a really safe space for people to think, to have conversations, and to do it all without any judgment. And that's a really special place to be. And it's not afforded to everybody. It's in the corporate world, all the most senior directors just get a coach as a given, because they know the value a coach can bring. And yet, to invest in yourself is it's hard financially to do that. It can, however, revolutionize your life. It can make changes that you would not do without that help and without that cheerleader, as you said before.
The cheerleader. So yeah. I know you are based in Hertfordshire, so you support people in Hertfordshire, and our listeners are here in Hertfordshire. But also, do I understand that you can support clients anywhere and around the world?
Absolutely, yes. So most of my sessions I run one-to-one online over a Zoom call. If we can make it happen, either in, you know, if I could come to people's houses, if that's something we can do face-to-face. But most of my work is done on Zoom, and it works brilliantly.
And if somebody was listening to this and thinking, actually, maybe it's something they'd like to discuss further, could they discuss it with you, you know, or do they have to commit and sign up to things, or how does that work, Kat?
So, no, I don't recommend anyone just parts with their money and works with a coach. I think it's really important that you work out whether the coach is right for you. And I offer a free discovery call. It's like a 30-minute chat with absolutely no strings attached. It's really important that you are both compatible. So coaching is a co-created thing. Like, you both are in it. And so you both have to be able to work really nicely together and have that trust. So the discovery call is a way for you to get to know me, for me to get to know you, and to understand if, in fact, the issue you're having is an area that I can support you in. So, yeah.
And if they wanted to get in touch with you, Kat, how could they find you?
So my website is katherinescottcoaching.com. So
is that with a K? Oh, yeah. Good, yeah. Good.
Catherine with a K. There's lots of Catherines of our generation, Jen. So you have to be very clear. But yes, katherinescottcoaching.com is my website, and you can book a discovery call directly on there.
Fantastic. Are you on Instagram?
I am. Oh, yes, I'm on Instagram. So again, it's Katherine Scott Coaching, all one word. So, or at, I should say, at Katherine Scott Coaching. And you can find me on LinkedIn as well. But that one is a little bit more tricky because I incorporate my married name as well. So that is Katherine with a K - Scott - Larkins, which has got an S on the end.
Brilliant. Well, look, if they want to find you, I think they're going to find you, Kat. But it's been really lovely chatting with you. And I think, you know, it's another important aspect of, you know, the parent life that is always worth chatting about. And if anybody is listening and thinking, core, I don't know, I feel like some adjustments could be made, or I'm not feeling happy about that, just know that there are people out there and you can always reach out and there is support if you need it. Kat, thank you so much for joining us. And I look forward to, you know, bumping to you soon, because we do pass each other on the school run. I will see you soon. Thank you so much, Kat. You take care.
Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
Now, if you're looking for something to do with the kids during half term, you could step back in time with a visit to the Celtic Harmony Camp to see how the ancient tribe celebrated their new year. They're gearing up for their biggest family event of the year, the Samhain Celebrations. The celebrations are happening between the 27th and the 31st of October at the camp's location near Hertford. It's a family day out with activities like the Spooky Woodland Quest, Celtic drumming, a fire procession, and even a wooden burning man. Mix Morning's Ian Pritchard spoke to Sarah from Celtic Harmony Camp to find out more.
Yes, so Samhain is what we like to call the Celtic Halloween. So traditionally that's sort of celebrated on the 31st. And the idea is that back in the day, back in the Celtic times, so sort of around before the Romans, or when the Romans came, they would celebrate Samhain. And that would be a big sort of, that's basically their Celtic New Year. So they'd have big fires, and they'd have the big festival, and all the harvest was over, and they'd sort of celebrate, and they'd have all these fires lit to bring the sun back, to sort of encourage the sun back to the earth so they could start the cycle of the growing again, because they were...
Oh, excellent. Well, we could do with some sun coming back as soon as possible, I think.
Definitely. Yeah, and so in modern times, that's become Halloween. But here at Celtic Harmony Camp, of course, we have to celebrate it like Samhain. So this October half term, so from the 27th, so Sunday the 27th to Thursday the 31st, which is the big day, we will be having Samhain celebrations, which is family days out, where families will be invited to come to our woodland, They can go through our Haunted Woodland quest. They can try a lot of different little Celtic crafts, such as like making their own broomsticks and things like that. And at the end of the day, they have a big fire procession as well. So it's a very exciting time.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, for people that haven't been to the camp before, just describe a little bit about how that all works, what it is and what sort of experience people have if they go.
Yeah, so Celtic Harmony Camp is, it's definitely hidden away. Unless you were looking for it, you wouldn't necessarily know it was there. We're sort of in the middle of Bournewood in Brickendon, and it's sort of like a clearing, which has all these round houses on it, which we built. Our biggest one is our Chieftain Round House, which is always an impressive sight because the Celts used to live in round houses. So the idea is that we've got a little mini village. But we also got our woodland area, which has been cleared for hunting and different activities as well. And we've got a few different modern amenities that people like, such as toilet blocks and things like that.
Okay, that's good to have. Yeah,
but we've still got our traditional area as well. So it's best of both worlds.
And so what do people do who come there? What do they experience?
So we do two different types of events. So we do, during term time, we do events for schools. So they come to see us. They're guided round our special Celtic village on a day by one of our dressed up Celtic tribespeople.
Okay.
So they all have their own Celtic names. So we've got Manachar, and we've got Caraid, and we've got Kuru, and all these different names. So we have to remember who's who, and we can't call them by their modern names. They have to be their Celtic names where they've got the kids. During the school holidays, we tweak the days a little bit, and we have these family days. So basically, mainly the children that visit can bring their parents back to experience this amazing day that they've had with their school.
And so those kinds of days, is it just for kids, or do families stay with the kids? How does that work in practice?
Yeah, so obviously when it's school groups, it's the children, but during the family events, we make it like a whole family day out. So obviously there are some things that the children will enjoy more, such as the Haunted Woodlands. It's very exciting for the children walking through there, but other things such as drumming, parents tend to enjoy more. You get them really getting into the drumming. And also we have history talks and things like that. So we definitely try and make it a little bit of fun for everybody.
Yeah. And would people expect to spend a morning there, an afternoon, the whole day?
Yeah. So it's 10 to 4 the day. So it's a whole day out. We've got a little restaurant on site as well where we do like little burgers and things like that. So It's a nice sort of relaxed pace, and we've got activities to fill the day, but it's also just about enjoying being in the natural space, getting away from screens, that kind of thing.
Fabulous. And so the Samhain thing, that's happening over half term. That's a special event. But you run events right the way through the year, I guess.
Yeah, so we sort of tailor them to the different times of year. Again, just going with the farming calendar of the Celts. So we always do something for Easter. We do our Easter Dragon Quest during Easter. And sometimes we do things for Imbolc or Beltane, which are other different times of the year. So it's always a little different here. We like to mix it up and keep things fresh.
Fantastic. And so if people want to find out a bit more, maybe book up a slot, I'm guessing you have to buy a ticket.
You do. It's pre-bookings only. All they need to do is go onto the website, which is celticharmony.org. And on there, there's a little button that says, it says Samhain, but obviously Samhain. If they click that, there's a little page that tells them all about the day, and there's a booking button there as well.
Excellent. And how much are tickets typically?
£12.50 per person, and under threes go free.
Okay, well, Sarah, that sounds super. And good luck with that, and good luck with the other events that are happening during the year at Celtic Harmony Camp.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And that was Sarah from the Celtic Harmony Camp telling us about the Samhain festival that's happening over half term and other events happening up there at their campsite near Hartford.
Thanks, Sarah and Ian. Sounds like something quite different to go and see. Finally this week, Lydia El-Khoury met up with Catherine Raiden from our sponsors, Raiden Solicitors, to discuss when court is necessary during a divorce.
Hello and welcome to The Parent Show on Mix 92.6. I'm Lydia El-Khoury. And tonight I'm delighted to be joined by Catherine Raiden from Raiden Solicitors. And they are, of course, sponsors of The Parent Show, we are delighted to say. Catherine, thanks so much for joining us on The Parent Show.
No problem. Hello.
So can you tell us about your role at Raiden Solicitors?
I set the firm up nearly 20 years ago, and I'm now the senior partner of 120 people. We have 62 family lawyers, and the aim is to provide family law advice and expertise to anybody who needs it.
That's fantastic. We've had the pleasure of speaking to a few of your colleagues, and it's always so insightful and so accessible, the information we get. So now today, I'd love to talk to you specifically about court proceedings. Now, in family law, when might it be necessary to go to court? I think it's kind of a topic that everybody's a little bit nervous about. It's kind of you're a little bit in worst case scenario in people's heads. But I'd love to know, is it always necessary or when is it necessary?
So in financial proceedings, there's only ever two reasons for going to court. One is if you disagree on a point of principle, and one is if you disagree on the facts. So a point of principle might be that you absolutely don't want to share your pension, and a dispute on facts might be you absolutely think that your spouse has another property in their name that you really want the court to determine. In relation to children, it's more to do with a breakdown of communication between the two parents, and you're asking the court to guide you into resolving the issues. Really, for children, it should always be the last resort.
Right. Okay. So it's really kind of clear and simple. So only on financial and to do with children. And can you paint a picture for us? What does court proceedings entail?
The pros and cons of court are exactly the same. So going to court entails a court process and a timetable that you have no control of. So that could be a good thing, because you might think that your spouse or partner is delaying everything. So you have a court process that requires you to turn up to court in 2 months or 3 months or what have you. On the other hand, you might find that quite oppressive, and you might find the timetable long away, or you might find it too quickly. The ideal scenario is that the court will help you bring closure to the dispute, whether it's children or finances. And that is the aim of the court proceedings. That's the role of the judge, is to hear both arguments and come to a decision. And that has to be the main advantage of going to court, is that you will end up with a decision at the end of it. But there's a lot of problems going to court, and there's a lot of issues that you'll find. But that is the main reason for going to court, to have a final decision.
And what does it look like? I'm picturing kind of movies where you kind of big old courtrooms. I mean, is it an intimidating environment, or is it a kind of a pretty accessible process? What does it look like?
It's a room a little bit like this. Quite often they have no natural light at all. They have a lot of faux wood panelling. There will be a big crest behind the judge. Nobody wears gowns. Nobody has wigs. It's meant to be a quite calm environment. Nobody should raise their voices. There's no one shouting objection, or there's no one barging into court. There's very, very rarely is there any journalists there. It's very rare that anyone else turns up. But it's not a very nice building. Hertford has a lovely building because it used to be the Corn Exchange. But Luton is at the top of a shopping centre, so the buildings aren't very attractive at all.
But, you know, just the way you've described it, I think is already calming in itself. Like you can kind of build a picture, and it isn't something like turning up in the Old Bailey. So I'm sure that'll help our listeners be less intimidated by it.
The problem is that you're not allowed to take pictures of the court, and we have asked several occasions whether we can go and take pictures of an empty court and have it on the website so people could actually see what's going on. But it's fundamentally a contempt of court, and MOJ aren't interested in making an exception. But what I do try and do with my clients is, if it's a big hearing, I do try and go to court with them, either before the final hearing or on the day, and walk them round to say, this is where the toilets are, this is the courtroom we'll be in, this is our meeting room. But it's not a pleasant experience. They don't pay any money or attention to the experience.
I think in ways that's probably better, because you're not kind of confronted with this big intimidating environment. It's just a room, sounds like any other room, which is great. Yeah. Thanks for that. So now, instead of taking photos, you can just refer everybody to this podcast and they can hear you describe it. So what does going to court or court proceedings mean in terms of a financial or emotional or a legal perspective?
In the financial proceedings, the purpose is very clear. If you're arguing over a pension that's worth £600,000, you might as well go to court and spend £10,000 to get a fair proportion of it. In relation to children, when to go to court is a bit more vague. There's no cost-benefit analysis. Some people will spend any amount they can on whether they see the children on a Friday night or a Saturday night, or whether they pick the children up at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock. It's a very difficult thing, but what we try and do is make clients know the pros and cons of everything and have a full understanding of why they're going to court so that they can feel part of the decision-making process.
Great. And so you mentioned that one of the pros, and also potentially, depending on your perspective, one of the cons of going to court is you have a final decision. And how quickly does that kick in? Is it literally the second the judge makes the decision, that's it?
Yes, but that implies the judge will make a decision within seconds. They're meant to make a decision on the final day and they're meant to tell you what the answer is. Quite often the judges need more time. And quite often they have no real sense of time. So they'll tell you that they'll email you next week, and it can be weeks and weeks or sometimes even months. And that's very upsetting for a client, because if you think that the court is going to give you a final decision, you never know when that final decision will actually happen.
Yeah, that's hard, actually. And it's out of your control, I guess. There's nothing that can be done about it.
No, I mean, you could always settle. You could decide that, having heard what the judge said during the course of the hearing and having made some concessions with the other side, you could have a meeting and settle. But most people think that we've got this far, we might as well wait for the judge to make a final decision.
Yeah, makes sense. And can you kind of help us more understanding the line of when to go to court and when not to go to court? With your experience, you must instinctively know. But can you describe it a little bit, like, when have you hit a wall and court is necessary?
I always say to people, you know, within the first month if you're going to need some help from the court. If you're writing to the other side and you're saying, can we have a decision within 2 or 3 weeks, then they'll either write back and say, well, can it be 3 or 4 weeks? Or they'll write back and say yes. But if they don't reply, or if they come back with a barrage of useless points, then you have a sense that you're probably going to need some help from another person, which will be the judge, because you can't make progress. But most cases, whether it's a children matter or a finance matter, if the clients want to, it should be possible to avoid court, and you should be able to discuss valuations or principles or anything like that between the solicitors. But if the solicitor doesn't feel that it's appropriate to engage, or the client doesn't want to engage, then that's when you end up going to court.
Yeah, I get it. That makes sense. And do you ever come across situations where going to court actually makes the situation more difficult?
Yes, I would say most of the situations end up causing some sort of polarisation. By the time the parties get to a final hearing, that small point where they told you about a year ago that they thought such and such may or may not happen, by the time they go to court, they have to believe wholeheartedly that it's happened. And it can have a polarising effect. Quite a lot of people say they want to speak their truth and say their truth. And if they get believed, that's great. But if they don't get believed, it's quite a difficult case for them. But the way the court systems are set up, it's adversarial. And so if you've said your truth and you've said what you believe, that was your chance. And the judge hopefully has taken some of it on board, even if they haven't completely agreed with you. In terms of finances, the time that the court goes badly wrong is when there was an offer that you should have accepted and you go to court instead because you're holding out for some particular principle and you end up getting less. But that's hopefully what your solicitor will tell you not to do, because we've always got the cost-benefit analysis in play. And so if you're arguing over an extra £100,000 and it's going to cost you £50,000 to argue it, hopefully the solicitor will have talked that through with you.
Absolutely. So before we wrap up today, Catherine, I'd love you to help our listeners, any parents out there who are perhaps on the cusp of divorce or thinking about going through divorce. Can you advise them the best approach when it comes to court proceedings?
If it's about children, all I'd say is that the two of you had some children or a child. The two of you made that decision and you've had those discussions between you about when they're going to have peanuts, whether they're going to have organic honey. And you had lots of decisions you made through discussing things together. At some point, you valued the opinion on the other parent. And for whatever reason, you're now going to court. And if you can hold on to the fact that they may be a terrible person and they may be an awful partner, but they are the father or mother of your child, I think that would be a really helpful thing to do. You can still go to court. You can still argue over the point of principle at what school they go to or what the contact should be. But if you can hold that in your mind, that would be helpful. I think you should also understand the process. You should understand that when it says it's a 10 o'clock hearing with a time estimate of an hour, you should block the whole day out. You should have childcare arrangements put into place. You should have some water. Don't take any hot drinks. The court won't allow it. And you should always think about alternative options. You can go to mediation at any point. You can take a break. You can have an adjournment and discuss other settlement options. There's loads of options out there available, and you are in control. It is the decision to go to court is the decision of the parties, and the court will help you make a final decision.
That's really helpful, Catherine. Thanks so much for all your advice and tips, and really for demystifying court proceedings, because it sounds, for me anyway, a little bit less daunting than I'd imagined.
Well, I'm glad. I think solicitors always forget how daunting it is for people. And whatever we can do to help that, I think is really important.
Brilliant. Thanks so much for joining us on The Parents Show today.
Thank you.
That was Catherine Raiden from our sponsors, Raiden Solicitors.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6, sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.